done. They have taken these tRNAs which are floating around, they have attached them to various chloroposes, the names are not important right now, and when this machine goes through this cycle, okay, three of these are brought together, crunched together, and you make the protein, you will obviously have different states where this tRNA is coming in and it's trying to recognize what is there on the mRNA, okay, then they will not be so close together, you will expect low fret, right, because the molecules are not close together, and there will be a mid fret where it's kind of been brought close together and you have been activating various, you know, hydrolyzing GTP inside this, and then when they are really stuck together in a peptide bond, you will have, you know, high fluorescence transfer is what you would expect. And now, interestingly, this is what you actually see, but I don't want to go into that. This has been, this property has been used to study how antibiotics work, okay, and what stage of this, because for, you would really like for particular bacteria, if you don't let the bacteria make its proteins, then the bacteria will die, okay, and that's how many of these antibiotics work, because they target the bacterial ribosomes, okay. So, what you can do is that, you can, these are the, you know, one, two, and, you know, it will go on. Two of these tRNAs are being brought together and to form, to be joined together. And now, if you add these various antibiotics, you will recognize this is tetracycline here, okay, restriptocin, pyromycin, various antibiotics. If you give these antibiotics, you now check what is the average level of this fluorescence transfer, okay. If tetracycline blocks this at the low fret, the fret never becomes high, which means that tetracycline blocks this. It prevents you from going from here to here, okay? And similarly for other antibiotics. So this is very interesting to see how antibiotics actually work and what stage of this ribosome they prevent these things from coming together. That's something that you can do in these kind of single molecule studies. Till now we were largely watching things happening by attaching chloropores, but what you can also do is that you can manipulate things, okay? So then there can be many reasons why you want to apply force, and one of the simple reasons is that, you know, these we are talking about nanometer scale molecules, and the thermal energies are obviously important at these scales, so the molecules fluctuate a lot all the time, okay? Given the typical flexural rigidity, they will fluctuate over nanometers quite easily. And so what you can do is that if you kind of stretch the molecule and pull it, and I will show you one example of that, if you keep it pulled while you are doing your measurement, you will reduce these background fluctuations and you will reduce this noise, and there are examples of that I will come to in a minute, okay. You can explore the energy landscape, because suppose, you know, this is one projection of the energy landscape, is obviously going to be complicated, it's going to be, you know, there are, you know, many degrees of freedom to that, but let us say this is one projection of the energy landscape along distance, okay, x. It has to move in this direction. I am projecting the energy landscape along that direction, and it has to go from this state, go over this bump, typical transition state, and go here. Now, if I apply a constant force perturbation, I will obviously perturb this energy landscape, because now if I am pulling it back, to go farther will be difficult. So, you know, the energy landscape may change like this, okay. So, I can ask how the energy landscape, what the energy landscape was, because if I applied a known force and I calculated how much the change was, I can calculate back to what it originally was, okay. So, these kinds of measurements have been done, and people do this, and to do this, you can do it in different ways, but typically the force transducer, how do you apply force at a level of a molecule? You can do it in different ways. One is you apply a magnetic field, you apply a magnet, which is what I showed you a little bit earlier, and the magnetic tweezers are quite useful many times, because they can apply a constant force over molecular dimensions. Why? Because typically the magnetic force is the gradient of the magnetic field, and you can make magnetic, you know, poles so that the gradient of the field is constant over micron dimensions, okay? That's fairly standard, easy to do. So you can apply constant force over usually even a cell, okay? And that's very useful in many situations. Atomic force microscopes, where you want to usually apply larger forces, okay? And that is what is shown here, where you basically have a cantilever, and to this is your molecule, this is the culprit, and you can move it up and down, and to measure how stiff, how strong this molecule is, and then you shine a light of this onto a detector, and depending on whether, you know, how much you have stretched this, this will change here, okay? And this is the kind of work which is also done in our institute. I don't know if Koti is here, but this is taken from Koti's work. And this is very interesting because what they did is that they took a protein called leucine binding protein, which was attached to multiple biotin proteins. Why? Let's not get into that right now. But basically, when they stretched this leucine binding protein up and down, and they calculated this, you know, from this they inferred the energy landscape of this leucine binding protein, you find that, you know, let's say it has to go from this initial state to the final state, it does not always follow the same path. It can take different pathways to go to this final state, and that is very interesting because these leucine binding proteins, bacteria bring in leucine across, gram-negative bacteria bring in leucine across the periplasmic space, because these bacteria have double lipid bilayer membranes, and to import this leucine through this, this protein, leucine binding protein, must fold and unfold in different ways, which is not very clearly understood. So this ability to fold in different ways may be important for this protein to pass through the periplasmic space. Okay, so this is something that was done here in this institute. You can also do other measurements, like where you apply force, is that you have, I talked to you about this ribosome. Now let's say you ask, how strongly is this mRNA bound to this ribosome? Can I pull it off? Yes, you can try it. What you do is that you take a bead, a plastic bead usually, and you attach it to this ribosome here by some means chemically. And then, you know, you basically have the mRNA stuck to this cover slip here, and then you pull. Okay, either you move the laser trap this way or you move the stage this way, and then you are measuring the position of this bead. When this mRNA, you know, detaches from this, like what is shown here, this will recoil back to the center of this trap. And you can see that happening here, and you see that that rupture happens at roughly 30 piconewtons. Okay, so that is the binding strength from one molecule. This is some of the information you would never have got in a bulk study. Okay, so this is the kind of things that you can also do using single molecule studies on ribosomes. So this is basically, you have not started pulling here. This bead is sitting here. The trabid is just fluctuating. Yeah, just fluctuating. And so that's what I said. When you start pulling, you reduce these fluctuations. I want to quickly go through this because this is not meant to be something that we do. So we have kind of, you know, and I'm talking about single molecule type of studies. We have the ability to do this single molecule type of studies, but we have deliberately been in departure from the single molecule studies because we want to address a little more complicated problems. And the interest that we have is in these kind of motor proteins, which walk along, there are many different kinds, but one is shown here. This is the kinesin motor, which walks along this kind of microtubule filaments, and it has particular places where it steps as it walks. So what we can do, and many other people can also do, is that you can take this motor out, stick it to a bead here, and put it in an optical trap. And in this optical trap is like a spring, so the motor pulls it this way and the trap pulls it back this way. And then you can, that is what is happening here. This is the bead. You won't see the motor, but you can see these kind of flips here, where this, the motor is trying to put it like this, and then it falls back. Okay, and so this is the kind of data that you get from these kind of measurements, where you have the force, which you, basically the assumption is that this is a linear spring, and you can actually show that, and you can measure the force, which is basically the displacement into the spring constant as a function of the time, and you get these kinds of data. Now, when we did this, this is what you can do with a motor, okay? But we wanted to understand what is the consequence of this to an animal, to a cell. That's always been our motivation, and I will try to give you one or two quick glimpses of that. I think I have about 5 minutes of time, but I'll come to our work later. But what, you know, the kind of interesting things that you can do here, this here is little bit of this data blown up here, okay? And you will see that every alternate cycle, the dwell time is more. So what are these things? These are steps. This motor is stepping like this, okay? And every alternate step is slow. So here, the blue, you know, you wait for a long time and then you quickly go here. And the blue waits for a long time, quickly go here. The interpretation of this is that kinesin, this motor, particular motor, kinesin, one leg is a little shorter than the other one, and it actually limps when it walks, okay? And there are theories for that and why it happens, and this basically shows that this motor walks in this asymmetric leg over leg or hand over hand model, but that's something I don't want to go into right now. But this is the kind of things which you can infer from these single molecule type of studies. We have been very interested in looking at these kind of processes inside cells, and the basic question is that here is a movie where what we have done is that these are particular kind of cells, what type is not important right now. You allow these cells to eat particles, foreign particles. These are the beads. These are 1 micron size, so that kind of gives you idea of the scale. And if you watch this for a long time, you will see these beads move a lot inside these cells, and this motion is because of the kinesin and the dynein motors. I won't go into telling you how that is shown, but basically the picture is that if you have one of these beads which is moving around, here is the bead, now it's supposed to be spherical but doesn't matter. You have both kinds of motors attached to it, and they, you know, sometimes this guy pulls, sometimes that guy pulls, and this activity of these kind of opposing motors allows this thing to, you know, reach a particular destination inside the cell. In relation to this, we have been very interested in how these motors are organized on the membrane of these kinds of, you know, things that they carry inside the cell. And what we had shown a while back is that one of these motors, the dynein motor, actually works like a gear-like mechanism. It can vary the force that it exerts depending on, you know, how hard you pull it back. It can vary its velocity. And so that's what I had shown a while back. But then what we did here is that we tried to understand, by doing these kind of single molecule studies, what does it mean to the cell, okay? And our inference was, I believe I've given a colloquium on this, was basically that if you have 4 or 5 dynein pulling something, the one at the front goes into low gear because it shifts into first gear because it slows down, and the ones at the back move faster because they are in third or fourth gear, and they tend to bunch up, and in that way they can share mechanical load better, and I won't talk about this more. What we had later shown is also is that these dynein motors seem to get geometrically organized into tight clusters on the membrane of these vesicles, and that is one mechanism by which you may be very useful for degrading pathogens inside the cell, but that's a story for another day. What we have also been kind of working on right now is that imagine that there are these two motors which want to go in opposite ways. What decides who is going to, you know, take over? How is this whole process pan out? And what we are now able to show, I believe, is that this is simply a coin tossing process, and this is the tossing of a fair coin. Okay, we are able to show that by statistical analysis, and we show it on the basis of experimental data, where now you have this motor pushing this object out in one direction and the other motor pulling it out in the other direction in the optical trap, and you do a statistical analysis of this and kind of do the geometry behind this, and you conclude that this entire process of this versus that motor can be explained by the tossing of a coin. It's a Markov process basically, okay? And I won't explain that. Lastly, in the last 1 minute, on a different kind of, you know, aspect, we have been very interested in how fat is secreted from the liver, okay? Now this is, I think, one problem which hardly anybody looks at. It is not, and we really think this is very important to understand, because as you know, most of the diseases of this present century are fatty diseases, okay? The liver is important because it controls whole body homeostasis of liver, of lipid, particularly fat, okay? And one of the things the liver does is that it secretes these particles called variable-density lipoproteins, VLDL particles, and it secretes a large number, and they contain a lot of fat, okay? So if this VLDL increases in your serum, in your blood report, then it is not good for you, because they contain cholesterol and they contain fat. What we were able to show is that, you know, so here are, how do we understand the secretion of fat from the cells of the liver at a molecular level and at a cellular level? And here are 2 hepatocytes, okay? Hepatocytes are cells in your liver, okay? And they are arranged in this funny way where 2 are joined to each other. And here are the microtubules on which fat particles, we could show, are carried towards the periphery of these cells. And that, when you go from the fed state to the fasted state, which is happening to you every day, you accumulate lots of fat in your liver. But somehow you have to prevent this fat from secreting, getting secreted out from the liver, otherwise you would be in serious trouble, okay? And we could show that probably one mechanism is that the kinesin motor is inactivated in this state because of it is controlled by insulin, and that controls fat secretion from the liver. But I don't want to say anything more than that, than this, and I will stop here. at all. Okay, maybe over tea.
Sure.
Yes. Yes. Gigons. Gigons.
So these are like
right. So you typically, yeah, right, exactly. So you have a current, you basic, but to you know read it, you need to drop it across a resistance and measure a voltage. Yes. Yeah.
Op-amps are very special ones because you need to have very very low offset current.
Yes,
so
absolutely. I showed you briefly is that Matthews in NCBS they do these kinds of measurements. I don't know if anybody else does in India. They do, and he's also now retired, so I don't know if
anybody.
ISCW. Yeah. Electrophysiology is the kind of broad name to this field. Yes. Okay, we do everything here in TFR. Okay, thank you.
So, let us thank Luke for this nice lecture. By giving this beautiful lecture by Lucas.